Police Court, James D. Smith, appearing on behalf of the appellant, the state of Nebraska. On the heels of the prior argument, I'm reminded of olden times, days of yore, and in those times there was a simple, understood, and easily administered proceeding known as a criminal violation proceeding. Those of you who were trial judges, prosecutors, may fondly remember those simpler times when justice was promptly and easily carried out. Those days were prior to the legislature delivering the gift of LB 605 and its purported cleanup successor, LB 1094. The introducer of LB 1094 provided a legislative statement of intent, which was LB 1094 is a cleanup bill to clarify statutes related to the Justice Reinvestment Initiative, which was enacted last session. With the passage of LB 605, the bill would make the following changes, clarify the process for responding to probation violations. In context, I would make the observation that LB 1094 has 19,830 words. By contrast, the Declaration of Independence has 1,337 words. The U.S. Constitution has 4,400 words and is the oldest and shortest written constitution of any major government in the world. Preliminary comments, I would say the court's mission in this appeal, if you choose to accept it, which you already have, is to construe the provisions of LB 1094 for a probation violation proceeding to hopefully explain a probation violation proceeding that can be understood and easily administered by trial courts, prosecutors, and defense attorneys. The state's position is that the district judge erred for three reasons in dismissing the probation violation at the pleading stage. First, the judge erroneously converted the prosecutor's alleged probation violation of condition number one into an alleged violation of the substance use probation condition number nine. The judge had no authority to do that. Only the prosecutor had authority to charge and allege which probation condition was violated, and the prosecutor alleged only the violation of condition number one.
You don't dispute that had the alleged violation been the one about not using or possessing, it would be a substance abuse violation.
I agree with that.
Okay.
The second reason I would point out is the statutory definitions of substance abuse and non-criminal violation do not apply to section 292267 sub 3, which was the section the judge relied upon by the district judge in dismissing. Those definitions of substance abuse and non-criminal violation by the expressed language, definitional language 29-2266 apply only to sections 29-2266-01 to 29-2266-03. By that express definition language, the substance abuse and non-criminal violation definitions don't apply to 29-2267 sub 3, which was the section the judge relied upon. Thus, in context, by the plain language of section 29-2267, that involves only a non-criminal or substance abuse violation.
In the ordinary sense of the word, not as defined in the...
That's correct. Not as defined by the statute, not defined at all. Rather, it just leaves us with language about the 90 days procedure for cumulative custodial sanctions. That applies only in response to a substance abuse or non-criminal violation. In that conjunction, that's something that's non-criminal.
This is an argument that was not articulated in the state's brief, isn't it?
It was articulated better in the reply brief, as one tends to narrow. I was involved in editing late one night the reply brief. The original brief, I would say, is very broad in that context, but I think it did narrow down to get to that point. So I think, since the prosecutor clearly alleged a criminal violation of the law, a criminal violation of probation condition number one, and in the context of 2267, that statute simply doesn't apply if it's a non-criminal substance abuse violation. The prosecutor alleged a criminal violation, not condition nine. I can add a fourth reason. Involves the jurisdictional question of whether this court has two cases or one case being appealed from to this court. The state did perfect its appeal in the misdemeanor case CR 17-135 involving dismissal of probation for a misdemeanor crime of false information. Section 29-2267-3, relied upon by the district judge, clearly applies only to felony probations, not misdemeanor probations. The jurisdictional statement of the prosecutor, the last sentence in original brief, points out that the clerk apparently refused to docket the misdemeanor appeal on the basis that the state hadn't paid the docket fee. The state did pay the docket fee. This court can, and I would ask you to take judicial notice, since you can look on Justice and see the filings that were made in that misdemeanor case after this court granted authority to appeal. It clearly shows the notice of appeal was timely filed, the docket fee was timely paid, thus the appeal was perfected, and there was clerical error in saying that not both cases are appealed from. The appeals were perfected in both. That being the case, the judge clearly erred in dismissing the misdemeanor probation violation when the statute he relied upon applies only to felonies. I don't know if the court has any questions or further questions.
If we were to take as instructive, not binding, but instructive, the definitions in the earlier statute, how do we reconcile that? In essence, you're saying that substance abuse violation means one thing under the specific definition, but in a statute that was amended by the same act, it means something different in the later one.
Actually, I'm not saying that. I'm just simply saying those definitions by the express term do not apply, so you don't even have to, by applying the text of the law, even look at them, because if the legislature wanted to make those definitions apply, they could have. They didn't do so. I do think you can read those definitions as, again, being for a substance abuse. You can have all kinds of substance abuse violations, which are don't drink alcohol, that's not a crime, don't go into bars, that's not a crime. So as far as those being activities involving substance abuse, sure, those are activities involving substance abuse and potentially substance use, but that is different than saying you committed the criminal crime of possession of marijuana or methamphetamine. Under this case, for all we know, the defendant could have had a trailer full of methamphetamine, possessed it, was not using it, had no intention of using it, and somehow or other, that's just substance abuse.
I'm just going to ask, under the definitions in 29-2266, the substance abuse and non-criminal violation, it's conceivable that a particular act could fall within both definitions?
it's conceivable the prosecutor didn't charge it that way.
Yeah, I understand what your argument is.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
I did have one other question.
Sure.
When we're talking about the language of probation terms, just generally, is it the state's view that the terms are to be sort of understood in their ordinary meaning as opposed to by reference to statutory definitions?
I would think so, because the court is free to just pronounce probation terms, which have the meaning typically that the judge pronounced, which would be their ordinary meaning. So I don't know that that necessarily would mean a specific statutory definition, and I don't believe the statute on the court's authority to set probation conditions actually requires them to be in some type of a...
Well, a lot of those behaviors are not statutory behaviors.
I'm not sure I understand.
In terms of, like you say, don't go to a bar.
Oh, sure.
Right. You know,
yeah.
Those are not statutory prohibitions.
No, those are just rehabilitative terms
right.
where the courts say
right.
don't do certain things.
Right.
That I think are needed for your rehabilitation, and don't go to a bar, don't be eating at places that serve alcohol, don't associate with basically your next door neighbor because the person's a problem. I mean, the judge can do all kinds of things as long as they're geared for the purpose of trying to rehabilitate the person.
Thank you.
One other question. In the context of probation, assuming that there is ambiguity, does the rule of lenity apply?
No, because I would say this is a procedural issue. This is not penalty. This is the procedure to be followed to revoke probation. Thus, I don't think the rule of lenity applies to the procedure. If we were talking about the penalty that was imposed, then the rule of lenity may apply.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. LaFleur, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, I'm Jack LaFleur. I represent the appellee in this matter. I'm asking the court today to affirm the district court's decision in this matter, which quashed the information for revocation of probation. It's important to point out that the matter before the court today is with respect only to the felony case that Ms. Yudlichka faced, which was a conviction for possession with intent to deliver methamphetamine. And so the state has, at least not prior to today, as far as I'm aware, alleged that 292267 doesn't apply to this probation case. And that's the analysis that I think that the district court took. The district court looked at 29-2267 sub 3 and analyzed it. And the first question was, is this probationer convicted of a felony? Yes, she was.
I don't think the state is saying that 292267 doesn't apply. It's saying that the definitions from 292266 can't be transported to 292267. So what's your response to
that?
Well,
and my response to that is I don't think that, at least down below, and I don't believe at the briefing level that the state said that the definitions in 2266 didn't apply to 2267. And if they don't apply, then what my response would be, what definition does apply? It's the substance abuse that's characterized in 2267. It follows 2266, which is the definition. I don't find any other definitions.
Well, what do we do in the normal course when a statutory term is used but isn't defined?
Well, normally the court would use it in its ordinary popular sense. It would give its typical statutory construction, but I think that's what it normally would do, Your Honor.
So where does that leave us?
Well, I think that the statute is then open to interpretation. I think the court should use, as the district court did, 2266, which defines what a substance abuse violation is. And in next door in 2267, it says that a felony probationer convicted of a felony revocation proceedings may only be instituted in response to a substance abuse or non-criminal violation if the probationer has served 90 days of cumulative custodial sanctions. And so the question is, what's a non-criminal violation or a substance abuse violation, well, right next door, 2266 clearly defines what those substance abuse violations are, or it has a non-exhaustive list of what substance abuse violations are and a non-exhaustive list of what non-criminal violations are. So I think the court should look there as help as far as what the legislature intended in 29-2267. And so I think that's what the district court did, was it looked at what the definition was of that statute. It looked at what the ordinary and popular sense of the term meant, and that's the construction that it gave as far as on page 3 of its order. And so I think that that's what the district court did as far as interpreting the statute. And so,
do you agree that there's overlap between the substance abuse violation and the criminal violation of possession of methamphetamine?
I'm not understanding your question exactly.
As the state argues, there's overlap between these two categories, and prosecutorial discretion chose which one to follow. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think the response is that the analysis is first, the question is whether 2267.3 says that the felony probationer can own, the inquiry begins with, is this a substance abuse violation or a non-criminal violation? If the answer to that is yes, then the response to that has to be 90 days of custodial sanctions. If the probationer has served 90 days of custodial sanctions, then of course that doesn't matter. The state can proceed under either theory.
Is possession of methamphetamine a criminal offense?
Yes, it is. But 2267 says a non-criminal violation or a substance abuse violation. So it doesn't have to be both. It's an either or, and non-criminal violation is set out, and non-criminal violation also includes a violation of the law.
Today you are not arguing that the charge that stemmed from Platt County was a non-criminal violation.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You're only arguing that it's a substance abuse violation.
That is correct, Your Honor. That's our argument, is that because this is a substance abuse violation under 2267 sub 3, the state must show in response to a substance, if it is a substance abuse violation, which is what we said it was, which is what the district court found it was, then the state must show first that the probationer has served 90 days of custodial sanctions before it can proceed with revocation proceedings, which is in conformance with the language of the statute.
If we buy on to your argument and we're applying the definition from 2266 that talks about associated with behaviors or activities associated with substance abuse, what's the practical limit on that? Isn't someone who, at least arguably, someone who commits a burglary to obtain money to sustain their drug habit, is that a substance abuse violation?
I think that somebody could argue that. I don't think that that's a very strong argument.
How do we draw the line then?
Well, I think that in this case it can be very narrow as far as what the district court looked at, is that it looked at the subparagraph B, which is, I believe, positive urine analysis for legal use of drugs. That's clearly one of in the list of the non-exhaustive list of substance abuse violations. So, well, what has to happen before somebody tests positive for an illegal use of drugs? Well, they use the drug, they consume that drug, and they possess it. And so in this case, what I told the district court and what I'm telling you here is that you can narrowly confine this decision to just as far as what behaviors are associated with the use of illegal drugs. Well, what is necessary to use an illegal drug? It is necessary to possess it, consume it, and then...
Is distribution necessary?
No, it's not necessary to use it.
What's the principled basis on which the district court drew a distinction between possessing controlled substances, the crime of possessing controlled substances, and the crime of distributing controlled substances?
the distinction on that? I think that the district court said that that would be a... I think that the district court didn't necessarily clearly say the distinction on those, but said that, but commented that, you know, that would be maybe, that would be something different if we were talking about the distribution of.
Why do you think it would be different?
Because I think, going back to my previous answer, which is that I think it's different because it's not necessary. Distribution is not necessary for the use and consumption of a controlled substance, which, if you're looking at the definitions of substance abuse violation, we're talking about somebody who tests positive. Somebody who tests positive had to use that drug.
Excuse
somebody
me.
Who used that
Didn't
drug
they have to get it too?
What's that?
Didn't they have to get it before they could use it?
They did. They,
I mean, if
so
you take
did,
your logic right. on back to its source,
they did. But they but just to
and
use
someone
it,
someone
had
to manufacture it before they could get it.
And I think that that takes it outside of just a behavior associated with the use.
Well, you can't use without possessing, but
right.
you can possess without using, correct?
You can, that's correct.
And what was the charge here?
The charge here was a possession, Your Honor.
Well, what's your response to that?
Well, my response to that is that's still a behavior that's associated with the use. I don't think that many
could,
county attorneys...
It could be, right?
Right.
But not
I
always.
Think, well, I think that if you give a fair... If you give a fair reading to a behavior that's associated with use, you have to possess to use.
Is your argument also assumed under the assumption that non-criminal means uncharged?
No, it's not necessarily. I don't think that my reading of non-criminal would go back to 2260. Would go back to 2266, which gives a non-exhaustive list of those non-criminal violations, one of which would be like a traffic infraction would be one of the non-criminal violations. So it's still a violation of the law, and you can't revoke the person under 20, you can't revoke the felony probationer under 2267.
So are we saying could be criminal but uncharged?
What?
Could be criminal but not charged? Does that help?
I guess I'm not... Totally
I'm trying to make the
Honor.
Distinction. I'm trying to focus on non-criminal, how that works.
Right. Non-criminal would be in that list of, would be under, what I would say is that it's under the list, that non-exhaustive list under 2260, under 2266 sub 4. And it gives those lists. So I don't think that it necessarily has to be uncharged. I think that it can be charged. I think that there can be a conviction. I don't think that the definition confines a non-criminal act to be something that is necessarily uncharged. It could be a traffic violation that has been charged, that has been pled guilty, or somebody has paid the ticket and it has been convicted of that traffic infraction. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that is uncharged. And so I see my time has expired. I'd ask the court respectfully to affirm the district court. Thank you.
Before you sit down, just as a practical matter, if your client's probation continued and he was convicted on the felony, what would happen to his probation?
As far as on the
The felony, the new felony with which he has been charged.
Right. What would happen to the probation?
Yeah.
Well, under the circumstance here, there, I guess the answer to that is this a substance abuse violation?
So the
response for Ms. Yedlicka would be that
I'm
she
sorry
should,
I referred
no,
to your client
that,
as a man.
That's fine, Your Honor. But the response to that would be to, because this is a substance abuse violation, is to custodially sanction her. In this case, that would be the effect, and then.
I think perhaps where the question was more aimed is if Platte County proceeded with the prosecution, you could end up with a situation where your client was sentenced to prison from Platte County and remained on probation in Madison County.
That's correct.
And is there something incongruous about that?
Well, I think that the court would have to consider what the both district courts, like Platte County District Court, would have to consider what the proceeding, where the proceedings are. But I think that that's just like any other district judge who has defendants who are being sentenced or are being considered in multiple counties. I think that's something that the court just has to consider. But no, but given the statute, the plain reading, if this is a substance abuse violation, well, then she cannot be revoked just under the plain language of the statute. And so I think the Madison District Court did the correct thing. And then the Platte County has to operate under under the statutory scheme and the sentencing scheme if she's ultimately convicted of possession of methamphetamine.
Thank you.
Okay. If there's no other questions, thank you for your time. And I ask the court to affirm the decision of the Madison District Court. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day, then, is In Re Guardianship of Suzette G.